Today, we're talking about miracles. Have you ever wondered why Jesus did miracles? He did them a lot, we're told in the Bible, and I wondered if you know why he did them. He fed thousands of people from the contents of some kid's lunchbox. He walked on water. He changed the weather in an instant, and he brought dead people back to life. And some people say, well, that's amazing, that's incredible. We've got to pay attention to this guy. And other people say, that's ridiculous. He couldn't have done that. It must have been some kind of a trick, an illusion. A bit like the one that I bedazzled you with. Some people say that Jesus was just an ordinary, nice, kind, but fundamentally deluded man. You know, on the surface, he was a well-meaning chap. But, for good or for bad, he actually believed that he had some kind of superpower, or that God worked through him. He didn't mean to deceive anyone, but he just thought that was the case. But actually, his miracles and the events were in fact just coincidences, things that people at that time believed because they didn't have the full knowledge of science that we currently have today, and you know, they weren't quite as intelligent as us, and so they were easily fooled. There are some who think that that's the case. There are others who think that Jesus was a cunning illusionist. That he had some kind of team of people, the disciples, who worked in cahoots with him to bring about the biggest trick of all history, to fool us all into thinking that a man could be God. And there are some people who think that, well, he was an ordinary chap, but the people who followed him were a bit odd. And they sort of elaborated on what he said and what he did. And, you know, it's Chinese whispers over a long period of time. Five people got fed, but actually it might have been 10, 100, 1,000, many, many thousands. And these things just get distorted over time. Do you know what? What I don't want to do this morning is to try and somehow prove every single miracle that they were genuine. Fundamentally, that would take too long to go through every miracle, to go through the you know, everything that would substantiate and everything that was said against. It would just take too long, and it would distract us from, I think, the core important message, which is this. That there was a meaning behind the miracles that Jesus did. And it's that which I think is really important, which I'd like for us to look at today. So this talk about is not about whether the miracles are genuine or not. I happen to think that they are, but it's not about that. It's about the meaning behind the miracles. Now, I appreciate that not everyone perhaps here, not everyone listening to this talk on the podcast, as they can do later on. Not everyone will agree with me that all that Jesus did and said is in fact true, that the miracles did in fact happen. And look, that's fine, okay? I hope we can still be friends. And I hope that if you don't believe that what Jesus did was true, don't let that sort of block you from what I'm going to say. Do you see what I mean? You see, there's a meaning behind the miracles, and I think this is really, really important. So even if you disagree with me, please carry on listening. I'm not here to try and trick you. I just want to say my opinion. What you do with this is entirely up to you. So we're going to be looking at, over the next couple of weeks, four talks about miracles. Because there are four types of miracles, okay? There's expelling demons from people. There's curing illness. Number three, there's dealing with nature. And then fourthly, there's overcoming death. So expelling demons, there was a boy who had an unclean spirit. And Jesus commanded that spirit to come out of the boy, and he was completely free at that point. Plenty of curing of illnesses, blind people seeing, lame people walking all of a sudden. There was dealing with nature, when Jesus just said to the winds, stop blowing. And then instantly, the whole thing, and the waves and the water stopped moving at an instant. I mean, even when you take the momentum of the wind away, it takes some time for it to dissipate. But no, this just straight stop. Overcoming death, his mate, Lazarus, was dead. So over the coming weeks, we're going to look at these four topics, one by one. And we're going to be looking at two things. One, what is it about those miracles? And really, why did Jesus do them? What's the meaning behind all of these miracles? Some people said that Jesus did miracles so as to get people to listen to what he was saying. And I think that there's some truth in that. It's a way of getting our attention. And I have these sort of moments in my head where I sort of pretend perhaps I can overhear Jesus' conversations with other people. And in my head, I can imagine Jesus sort of saying this. Excuse me, you over there, yep, the blind guy. Look, would you mind if you help me out for a moment? Because I just want to heal you, because no one's paying any attention to me. And if I heal you in front of everyone else, then they'll listen to me and they'll believe anything I say. Is that okay? I think there is some degree of truth in this statement, because people did listen to Jesus when he did miracles. That's the fact of the matter. As an example, the first people who followed Jesus as a result of the miracles that he did was his own disciples. So there was a bunch of fishermen. They had been fishing all night, hadn't caught a thing, really upset, really deluded. Disillusioned, thank you very much. They were just disillusioned, they were tired, a bit ratty. And Jesus, walking fresh-faced along the beach in the morning, says this: put out into the deep and let down your nets for a catch. And Simon, who was one of the fishermen, answered, Master, we've toiled all night and took nothing, but at your word we'll let the nets down. And they had, when they had done this, they enclosed a large number of fish, and the nets were breaking. And they signaled to their partners on the other boats to come and help them. And they came and they filled the boats so that they began to sink. And when Simon Peter saw this, he fell down at the knees of Jesus, and he said, depart from me, because I'm a sinful man, O Lord. I mean, he'd realized that Jesus is something special, hadn't he, at this point? For he and all who were with him were astonished at the catch of fish that they had taken. And so also were James and John, the sons of Zebedee, great name, and the partners with Simon. And Jesus said to Simon, do not be afraid. From now on, you will be catching men. And when they brought their boats to land, they left everything and followed him. There was a miracle, and then people followed Jesus. It was an attention grabber. But I don't think that this was the primary reason why Jesus did miracles. Because actually, lots of people saw the miracles that Jesus did and did not believe. Probably more, actually. And in fact, if that was his idea to be an attention grabber, it frankly didn't work very well. John 7 verse 5 says, not even his brothers believed him. I mean, when I say brothers, I mean his genetic brothers. They didn't even believe him. And that after Jesus had walked on water, fed thousands of people with a couple of loaves and two fish, healed a lame man, healed an officer's servant, turned water into wine at a wedding festival, and perhaps loads more miracles that were never mentioned in the Bible. Even after all of that, still his brothers didn't believe him. I mean, the point being, there must have been many, many, many people who didn't believe him. They failed to be to have the attention that the miracles you might think should deserve. Moreover, it appears when we read the Bible that Jesus actually wasn't looking for any attention at all. He was quite surreptitious often about how he did things. And in fact, to many happy recipients of his miraculous powers, he told them, don't tell anyone at all what's just happened. Keep it to yourself. I mean, there was one example of a deaf man, and it says this in Mark 7:32-36. And they brought him, a man who was deaf and had a speech impediment, and they begged him to lay his hands on him. And taking him aside from the crowd privately, he did a very strange thing. He put his fingers into his ears and having spat and touched his tongue. We'll go on to that some time later, perhaps. And he looked into heaven and he sighed and he said a funny word which I don't understand, but it means be opened. And his ears were opened, his tongue was released, and he spoke plainly. And Jesus charged him not to tell anyone at all. Does this sound like a person who is after attention? No, I don't think it does at all. We can't say that these miracles are a result of Jesus, purely as a result of Jesus just wanting people to listen to his words. It doesn't make sense. I think there's some degree of truth, but it's not completely true. It doesn't make sense. So, therefore, is there another reason? Perhaps, did Jesus do miracles as a way of rewarding the faithful? You see, there are many times in the Bible where it says, your faith has made yourself, by your faith you've been made well. It happens a lot. This is Jesus rewarding the faithfulness of people. Here's a good example. Jesus said to him, what do you want from me? And the blind man, funnily enough, said, you know, I want my sight to be recovered. And Jesus said to him, go your way. Your faith has made you well. And immediately he recovered his sight and followed him on the way. It would appear that this faith and the miraculous events were linked. Your faith has made you well. But can we say categorically that in all instances, it's faith that makes us well, or faith that creates a miracle of some form? I don't think that's the case. You see, there are other occasions where Jesus works miracles and there was no faith to be seen at all. I'll give you another example. Jesus bumps into a funeral and there was a dead boy. And this is what happens. He drew near to the gate of the town, and behold, a man who had died was being carried out, the only son of his mother, and she was a widow. And a considerable crowd from the town was with her. And when the Lord, Jesus, saw her, he had compassion for her and said to her, do not weep. And then they came up and touched the bier, and the bearers stood still. And he said, young man, I say to you, rise. And the dead man sat up and began to speak. And Jesus gave him to his mother. You see, the boy had no faith. He was dead. Right? There was no sign in this story of any faith at all, either by people before or afterwards. Jesus took them by surprise. So it's difficult to argue, I'd say, that faith is always required for a miracle to happen. In fact, I'd go so far as to say this. it can be dangerous to say that, that faith is required at all times. Why? Because, you know, just put yourself in these shoes. You've got an illness, okay? And you've been praying, and others have been praying for years for your illness to go away. And it doesn't. Is that because of your lack of faith? I mean, these people are already feeling pretty miserable. It's not really fair for us to say, well, actually, it's your fault, it's your lack of faith that you're ill, or your lack of faith that you're ill and you're not being able to become better. That's really harsh. And it's not true. And we need to be very, very careful not to go around upsetting people in that regard. It's a dangerous territory. So I think we're left to conclude that, yes, there are instances where faith and healings and miracles do work together, but not all the time. Or at least what we need to be sure is to say that anyone who is ill needs to know that they are not personally responsible for their illness or the lack of their healing. Okay? That's, we need to avoid that. But what this story does, the story about the dead person rising up from the funeral, what that does demonstrate is perhaps another reason that brings about miracles. The fact that Jesus had compassion. Do you notice that? And when the Lord saw her, he had compassion on her and said, "Do not weep." Time and time again, we notice in the Bible when Jesus did miracles that he had compassion on them. One time, at Mark 6:34, the feeding of the 5,000, lots of people, Jesus said he had compassion for them. They were like sheep without a shepherd. In other words, there was no one to lead them, no one to feed them, no one to protect them. They were out there ready to get mauled by the next wolf that came along. And Jesus had compassion for them. But even Jesus' compassion can't be the complete reason why Jesus did miracles, because there were plenty of sick people who Jesus met, and they didn't all get healed. We're asking the question, why did Jesus do miracles? We've gone through some of the sort of the common answers that you might hear, okay? But all of them aren't a complete answer. They might have some element of truth, but they're not in of themselves a complete answer. Now, as part of this, you know, talk, my preparation for it, I was reading again talks that were once given by a chap called John Wimber. He's a founder of the Vineyard, dead now, but he founded the Vineyard. And he's known throughout the wider church as someone who is one of the foremost brains and practitioners of what he calls signs and wonders, or miracles. He knew a lot about this stuff, and God often did miracles through him. And he's written lots of wise words about miracles. So I was reading some of what he was, had written, and John said that to understand the meaning of Jesus' miracles, we need to first look at the words Jesus spoke. Because what Jesus said and did, his words and his works, are two sides of the same coin. What did Jesus say? Well, Jesus' first inaugural speech, you know, it doesn't make sense. So Jesus' inaugural public speech was short and sweet. And he got up in front of a huge crowd, and he simply read out an extract from Isaiah 61, which had been around for a long time. And it says this, this is Jesus speaking, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, because he has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim liberty to the captives and recovery of sight to the blind, to set at liberty those who are oppressed, and proclaim the year of the Lord's favor." You see, the words and the works of Jesus point us towards this great mission. First off, okay, Jesus came to bring good news to the poor. And he came, this is good news both on a practical level and on a spiritual level. He came to tell us all about the great gospel that he was embodied, the good changes he was bringing about. And they had both a social and a spiritual dimension. He came to set people free. Now, I think that Jesus particularly liked to talk and do miracles relating to justice matters, feeding the homeless, coming alongside and befriending the lonely. And that's because these people, the poor and the marginalized, they find it most difficult. They're most held captive to our unfair society. And that's why I think Jesus had a preference for these people. When he came to bring freedom, the poor and the marginalized are the people who were, in a sense, the most captive. He needed the most help. And he came to bring restoration. He came to heal the sick, to set the spiritually oppressed, the demon oppressed, free. No natural force was greater than he. Even death could not contain him. And then, the last bit on this passage, it says that he came to bring about the year of the Lord's favor. What does that mean, year of the Lord's favor? Many people of the time will have heard and be familiar with the phrase, the year of Jubilee. It was a favorable year. It was especially favorable for the poor. It was a time when, it happened every 7 years, and it was a time when, in the Jewish culture, everything was redistributed fairly. They sort of got everything together and they sort of spread it out. If you were a slave and the year of Jubilee, you were free. If you had debts, your debts were paid off. It's a redistribution of wealth. The year of Jubilee. Jesus was saying, I've come for the year of the Lord's favor. In other words, I'm coming to make this year of the Jubilee thing a permanent state where it is always free. Everyone is always equal. I've come about to change absolutely everything. I bring about a new era, a never-ending era. It's a time when God will completely rule over the earth. And who ruled by himself. And so this was Jesus' manifesto. And I'd like to think, I have to think, that Jesus actually did what he said in his manifesto. Okay, and we know this because when we looked at Matthew 4:23-24, it says this, "And he went throughout Galilee, teaching in their synagogues and proclaiming the gospel of the kingdom and healing every kind of disease, every affliction among the people. And so his fame spread throughout all Syria, and they brought him all the sick, those afflicted with various diseases and pains, those oppressed by demons, epileptics, paralytics, and he healed them." Everyone. You know, he just went on and healed. He had this manifesto, and then he did it. And so Jesus came to tell us the truth. He came to restore the whole world. Our lives, our relationships, our relationship with God. He wanted to come and make all things perfect. And he brought with him a new kingdom, rule, and reign. That we might live exclusively in the presence of God and have a completely full life, just how it was always meant to be. It's important, I think, at this point that we should know that at this present time, I've mentioned this a number of times recently, but I'll say it again. We're in this, it's a time of battle. There are, in a sense, God's kingdom has come and is coming. But at the same time, Satan has influence over the world. You can see it all around. I mean, there's plenty of evil to be seen. But God has come to restore a world that Satan has ransacked. Now, Satan knows that he has lost. He lost when Jesus came and was crucified and rose from the dead. That was Satan's losing moment. Okay, but he's cornered. He's squirming around and he's wreaking as much havoc as he can with the time left available to him. Every miracle we see today is a counteraction of the evil that Satan has afflicted in the world. Do you know what? Our enemy, it isn't ISIS. It isn't terrible, terrible people. Our enemy is Satan, who has deceived these people into thinking that what they're doing is a good thing. And we know we need to keep that. We need to be aware of that and keep that in the forefront of our minds. I think that the miracles are a bit like a trailer of a movie. There are excerpts, they're sort of foretastes of what's to come. They're physical expressions of the inbreaking of God's kingdom in our world. And they echo the sermons and the parables that Jesus spoke about. So all that we've looked at about what Jesus' manifesto was and the things that he went on to talk about, the miracles are the two sides of the same coin. They're an enacting of what he was saying. Jesus did miracles to show that God had come to us and that he had bought good things for us. He bought freedom, healing, restoration, full life, and a whole new way of living. And it's this whole new way of living which is of such importance to us. It's the overcoming of the kingdom of the reign and rule of Satan. That's what's so important. And that's why we say, time and time again, as Christians, we say, "Our Father in heaven, hallowed be your name. Your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven." We're asking the kingdom, the rule and reign of God to come on earth as it already exists in heaven. And Jesus did miracles. This is the lasting point, really. Jesus did miracles to show us what his kingdom looks like when it comes in completion and completely destroys the kingdom of Satan. So, over the next couple of weeks, we're going to look at, as I say, four separate talks. We're going to this in more detail. We're going to investigate, I think, on a more tangible level, why God did miracles and what they mean to us. And specifically, how we should respond ourselves to the miracles that Jesus has already done. So I want to finish with one verse, which I'd like for you to sort of think this, if, you know, forget about everything else. Forget about the magic trick, which I know. And just think of it, just think of this, okay? This is one verse I'd love you to, it's a memory verse, okay? John 14:12. "Whoever believes in me will do the works that I have been doing, and they will do greater than these." John 14:12. "Whoever believes in me will do the works I have been doing, and they will do even greater things than these." Think that through. Now that's your homework. See, our challenge is to believe everything that Jesus believed and do everything he did. But apart from that, it's quite easy. So, we're going to, as we tend to do here, we're going to have a time now of ministry. We're just going to hang out with God. Why don't you stand up with me? You know, having said all of that, what we'd love to do now is just for God to come. And maybe he'll do miracles today. amongst us. Maybe he will gift you anew, gift you afresh. Maybe give you boldness, clarity, make you into a risk-taking purpose, so that you could do the miracles that Jesus did and believe all that he believed. Frankly, I'd love that for myself. So we're going to pray, and we'll just see what happens.